Good morning, the Green Valley News. For Wednesday, July 22nd, Mark DeGroft with you here at Sun Sounds of Arizona. The ball is rolling for Suarita's first RTA Next project, widening La Vallita Road to two lanes in each direction, while connecting Suarita Road with Nogales Highway to the south. The $34.2 million project is part of the 20-year, $2.67 billion RTA transportation and transit plan that's been approved by voters in March and includes a bicycle and pedestrian path and drainage improvements. Assistant Town Manager Beth Abramovitz said on Monday Suarita began advertising for a design consultant about a week ago, and that the Regional Transportation Authority is working to create many of the legal documents jurisdictions needed for the projects, such as intergovernmental agreements. But to keep things moving, Abramovitz said the town has requested pre-authorization, which included an anticipated schedule and seeking permission to get started. RTA Director Mike Ortega gave the approval to begin without having the IGAs in place. Abramovitz said their schedule anticipates the town will select a design firm probably in mid-November, but that it would likely be the better part of 2 years before residents see any construction. Meanwhile, the town is working on multi-use trail from El Toro Road north to Suarita Road that will extend on the west side for the entire length of the extension once it is completed, Abramovitz said. One of the town's first multi-use path projects was along Quail Creek extension between Old Nogales Highway and Nogales Highway. Abramovitz said the path received a lot of positive feedback and significantly more use than anticipated. The town expects the RTA Next extension of La Vita Road to go south from where La Vita Road currently ends, next to Los Arboles Community Mobile Home Park, to Calle Valle Verde, where it will connect to Nogales Highway. Abramovitz said it would be the last intersection heading northeast of Walmart before looping south, or north that is, to Suarita Road. The project will have about 1.5 miles of new road, along with improvements to about 1.5 miles of existing road. Abramovitz said the La Vita Road connection with Calle Valle Verde wouldn't end up right outside the homes, since there is open space east of them. But La Vallita Road is already passes alongside Los Arboles homes near its terminus at a private dirt road the town does not maintain. Those residents will have a new, wider road and multi-use path outside of their homes, but Abramovitz said that the improvements would bring better drainage. She said the town has worked with FICO, F-I-C-O, to make improvements by removing some of the dirt berms that are near the roadway. But there's some drainage issues out there, especially trying to get to that mobile home park in some of the heavier rains, and so this will connect to that, Abramovitz said. The parcel is around 230 acres south of Town Hall and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints building, with La Vallita Road running down its eastern boundary. Rancho Suarita borders the parcel on its west side, and Los Arboles and rural lots border it to the south. The 230 acres includes more than 83 acres of open space and the Man in the Maze Trails Park and its remediated former mine site land. There are also nearly 137 acres of development available land that is south of the Union Pacific Railroad near the park to El Toro Road. She said the town started discussions with Global Water in hopes that they will install any necessary water lines at that time. The town also hopes that La Vallita Road's construction, starting about 2 years from now, will line up with the county's plan for a regional wastewater plant that is expected to go online right around 2030. The county plans to shutter the Green Valley Reclamation Plant and Amado Lagoons to feed into the new facility that will be east of Nogales Highway and north of Pima Mine Road. So about the time our road is essentially open for business, the regional wastewater facility is going to be open for business as well, which I think is going to help spur some of that development in those currently underdeveloped areas, especially the ones in Suarita Farms. That's probably the biggest component that Suarita Farms has been waiting for, is to have that sewer availability, Abramovitz said. So Arena Farms is a 5,645-acre planning area that the town council unanimously okayed in 2015 that paved the way for future development of FICO's pecan groves into housing, commercial, and open space. The plan includes land on the eastern side of La Villita Road, as well as to the south of it and east of Valle Verde del Norte neighborhood. Gonzalez said opening a new south corridor, a north-south corridor connecting Suarita Road and Nogales Highway, could alleviate some stress on existing corridors and also bring opportunities. But I think our focus is going to be primarily on Parcel 30 and the infrastructure that is going in place that belongs to Value Parcel 30, he said, adding that the land could then be seen differently by would-be developers. Abramovich said the new north-south connection is important, especially with growth in Rancho Cerritos Region 9, where the 954-lot Entrada del Toro subdivision is underway. Entrada del Toro is east of Interstate 19, just south of El Toro Road. So it really does help facilitate a lot of development right in that area, she said. And it'll help with the traffic flow from Region 9 and any future development in that area, having have that in place ahead of time. Epstein Construction is about to demolish the former Green Valley Pet Club on Abrego Drive in order to make way for a Pima Federal Credit Union, so they decided to give Santa Rita Fire District crews a big opportunity. Over the course of 10 days, crews had the chance to practice critical skills, including hose development, ventilation, breaching, rapid intervention, firefighter rescue, and on-scene decision-making skills in a realistic setting, SRFD spokeswoman Amy Schultz said. Every fall, residents of the Springs at Santa Rita go into attack mode. Up to 18 volunteers gather up their gloves and gardening supplies every Tuesday and Friday through June and do what they can to make sure their homes are safe from wildland fires. They work to eradicate buffelgrass and other invasive weeds from their 26-acre nature park and their 20 acres of common areas, said Bruce Grieshaber, president of the Springs at Santa Rita HOA. They're also constantly clearing out dead mesquites and Palo Verde branches. This year, they set aside $8,000 for the constant battle, but for the first time, they got a bit of help on that score. The Green Valley Council received a $20,000 grant for wildlife fire mitigation that has been passed from Freeport-McMoRan to Pima County's Office of Emergency Management to the GVC. The Springs applied for and received $1,400 of that money, the maximum allowable. Another 14 HOAs received funding that ranged from $500 to $1,400, said GVC President Debbie Kenyon. A 15th HOA is waiting on their check. They were quite thankful for the grant, Grieshaber said. You know, every penny helps. The Springs began getting interested in wildland fire mitigation at least 5 years ago, according to Grieshaber. In 2021, HOA's infrastructure chairman, Mark Caruga, asked the Arizona Department of Forestry and Fire Management to evaluate them in terms of wildland fire safety, Grieshaber said. At that time, the risk level was considered low, but they decided in 2023 to become a FireWise USA community. FireWise USA provides certificates to communities that put in a lot of time, effort, and planning to educate homeowners in wildfire safety and work to mitigate the impact of wildfires. Thanks to their volunteers and a landscaping company, the Springs has built a 30-foot defensible area that lies between homes and the nature center, and 800 feet of oleander near the frontage road was cleared of dead and dying branches. In fact, the GVC grant money went toward the oleander project. Between the volunteers and a landscaping company, they've also trimmed overhanging Palo Verde and mesquite trees and have cleared out long dead branches on the ground that are in the same area. If somebody throws a cigarette out of a vehicle, I think we can feel pretty confident now that there's going to be no fire, Grieshaber said. The program has become very popular. As of April, 23 HOAs earned a certificate, 14 in Green Valley and 3 in Suarita. For several months, Pima County has been working on a countywide fire mitigation plan, but the GVC has worked for years on its own to help HOAs do what they can to ensure that their safety from hosting multiple educational forums featuring the Tucson Audubon Society, Pima County Regional Flood Control District, and the Santa Rita Fire District to providing grant funding in order to attack invasive weeds. Kenyon hopes the GVC will be awarded more grants in the future and that they are taking steps to increase those odds. Earlier this year, the GVC learned of grants being offered by the Arizona Department of Forestry and Fire Management and Pima County. But given the timing, they weren't prepared to apply, she said. For example, the DFFM required a vector map, Kenyon said. So now the GVC hopes to work with its member HOAs to get one created by the end of the year. As for the county, they couldn't meet Pima County's deadline, but they did temporarily obtain 3 roll-off dumpsters for HOAs to deposit debris in the spring, saving the HOAs that expense, Kenyon said. They hope to receive more roll-offs from the county in the fall, but the GVC will also be asking for a portion of $500,000 that Pima County has available for mitigation efforts for fiscal year 27. We're hoping that we get more than $20,000 from the county. That would be wonderful, and then we can make up the ante a little bit, Kenyon said, referring to the maximum allowed by the Freeport grant. We'll be asking for feedback this fall after monsoon to see what kind of growth we have. It's going to be real interesting to see how we move into fall and winter with mitigation efforts after a decent rain season, Kenyon said. We'd really just kind of want to cover the bases and be able to give some sort of relief and recognition to these HOAs. I mean, this is a lot of work. It's a lot of work, and they take it very seriously. If successful in obtaining additional grant funding, Kenyon said they hope to help additional HOAs while also continuing to support those who received help from the Freeport grant. Those who received that help were grateful, she said. I think the general consensus was, wow, we've never been able to get any money back from the work that we're doing, Kenyon said. I got a lot of thank you notes when they got the check. The 2025 Los Angeles fires that burned more than 57,000 acres proved to be a real catalyst for action in Green Valley, as did insurance companies dropping coverage or increasing rates, Kenyon said. And the GVC is glad to be a part of the efforts, she said. It's a little bit of legwork on our part, but I think the benefits and what it brings to our community is just some solidarity and engagement, Kenyon said. It's just about 9:45. Copper Hills Little League 12U softball kept its Little League Softball World Series life hopes alive on Monday morning, rallying for 5 runs in the 6th inning to defeat Hawaii 6-5 in an elimination game at the West Region Tournament in San Bernardino, California. Madison Braden went 2-for-3 with 2 RBIs to lead the Copper Hills offense. Alexis Ortega and Blake Moreno added 2 hits and an RBI apiece. They responded exactly the way they've responded all summer, with resilience, confidence, and togetherness, Copper Hills head coach Ryan Braden said. This morning we talked about staying in the moment and remembering who we are. Our team's motto is one team, one goal, and today they truly live that out. Nobody tried to do it all by themselves. Every player contributed, every player believed, and they kept picking each other up. Hawaii broke a 1-1 tie with 3 runs in the top of the 4th inning and added another in the top of the 6th to stretch its lead to 5-1. Despite the deficit, Braden said the team stayed composed heading into its final at-bat. They stayed positive, trusted each other, kept fighting one pitch and one bat at a time, Braden said. That 6th inning wasn't about one big swing. It was about a team that refused to give up and kept believing until the final out. We're incredibly proud of these girls. They show a lot of character today, and this win is a testament as to what can happen when everyone is committed to one team, one goal. Copper Hills, representing Arizona, will face Southern California on Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. Copper Hills fell to Nevada 2-0 on Saturday in the double elimination regional tournament, setting up Monday's elimination game. The winner of the West Region, crowned on July 23rd, advances to the Little League Softball World Series in Greenville, South Carolina. The journey to regionals began for Copper Hills when it defeated Tolleson West and on 7-2 on July 14th in Mesa to capture its first ever state title, becoming the 27th team from Southern Arizona to win a state championship. Copper Hills went 4-0 at the state tournament, beating Tanque Verde 10-0, Maricopa 10-0, and Tolleson West End 4-1 before the elimination game rematch. Wow. Copper Hills softball secured a berth in the state tournament after a 10-0 shutout over Las Niñas in the District 12 championship game at Animax Park back in June. A trailer park management company that is being sued by Democratic Attorney General Chris Mayes is spending big to back one of Mayes' GOP opponents in a bid to defeat her in November. Mays filed a lawsuit against the Bovita Group last year after electricity outages during a deadly summer heat wave left residents at Tucson's Redwood Mobile Home at Mobile Park in danger. Bovita owns five other trailer parks in Arizona. Now, Bovita is the largest backer of the Restore Order Arizona PAC, which has been spending money on ads supporting Arizona State President Warren Peterson and his campaign to become the Republican nominee for AG in November. The company poured more than $600,000 into the pro-Peterson campaign through the end of June, this according to a campaign finance report that was filed this month. Other state AGs have also taken interest in pursuing the company over allegations of poor conditions at the parks that they manage, as well as rate hikes. Bovita accused Mays of being unfair and anti-business and said she should be replaced by Peterson. As a business owner in Arizona, we support those who are not anti-business, those who are fair, reasonable, and seek to benefit the state as a whole, not just look for targets for publicity, the company said in a statement to the Arizona Mirror. We believe Warren Peterson reflects the conservative values of the state and support his candidacy. The company said it hasn't discussed any legal matters with Peterson, and Mayes' campaign is unconvinced. In June, we said, follow the money. Now we know where it leads. 4 days after Attorney General Mays asked a court to hold Bovita in contempt for leaving Arizona families in dangerous, sweltering conditions, Bovita's companies wrote $500,000 in checks to Warren Peterson's PAC, said T.J. Quinlan, a consultant for Mays' re-election campaign. Those corporate landlords and mobile home landlords aren't donating. They're shopping for an attorney general who will drop the cases against them. Warren Peterson is happy to oblige. Peterson didn't respond to multiple requests for the comment to this story. Bovita has been facing pressure from lawmakers across the country, as well as from many tenants. It is also one of six companies that New Hampshire U.S. Senator Maggie Hassan asked to produce internal documents and materials that show their businesses have impacted mobile home parks across the country. And they also aren't the only mobile home park owner investing heavily in the race. Haven Park Management, Newberry Management, Comfort Communities, and a number of small Arizona parks contributed more than $85,000 to the PAC. Those parks and Bovita's contributions combined make up almost half of the money raised by Restore Order Arizona. The PAC also includes corporate landlord interests, with groups like American Homes for Rent contributing $10,000. The PAC seems to be largely funded by a collection of special interest groups that Mays has clashed with during her first term as the Attorney General. The largest individual donor is a major player in the nicotine vape industry in Arizona, which Mays has aggressively sought to regulate. Private prison company Geo Group, which operates a number of detention facilities for the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, is another major funder. Geo Group has reported record profits since Trump took office and has been pushing the administration for larger enforcement efforts. and another $10,000 came from VGW Lucky Land Incorporated. It's a company that operates a number of unlicensed sports betting sites that the Arizona Department of Gaming, which is backed by Mays, has sought to shut down. It's the first time I personally have looked and seen the donations that ever happened, said Mary Alice Thoreau, a Tucson mobile home park resident that has been organizing to push back against predatory practices. Thoreau said the out-of-state companies have been largely contributing to issues at local mobile home parks that she said lawmakers have been largely ignoring. Thoreau was able to get the ear of Mays and others who have been working to try to pass legislation or file lawsuits against the park owners. One of these major issues have been how mobile home and manufactured home parks deal with utility metering. Submetering is when the landlord or the property owner is the customer of record for a utility company, which often leads to tenants not being able to get information from a utility company on the outages. It also is leading to fees that residents say are unfair. Lawmakers sought to address this issue during the last legislative session, but Peterson killed the multiple bills. First, a bill that passed unanimously in the State House of Representatives, dying in the Senate, which Peterson presides over. A second version of the bill was introduced later in the session, another earning broad bipartisan support in the State House, before once again stalling in the Senate, where it was never brought up for a vote. I think there's a real bipartisan recognition that this is an issue happening in these parks, said Kelly McGowan, who is the executive director at the nonprofit Wildfire, which focuses on the issues of poverty. Legislation sought to cap administrative fees for utility metering at $8, as park residents have reported high administrative costs for this service, leading to outsized bills. It would also have made it easier for residents to speak directly with utility companies about the issues regarding service. And for both Thoreau and McGowan, the parks represent a subsection of Arizonans that are especially vulnerable to a number of issues. I am sick and tired of seeing elderly women and elderly men taken advantage of. They're afraid to stand up because they're afraid of getting threatened with eviction, Thoreau said, adding that a number of elderly heat-related deaths have been tracked to these parks. This is really an affordable housing stock for some of our most vulnerable community members, McGowan said, noting that another piece of legislation aimed at adding protections for these residents under Arizona's Consumer Fraud and Protection Act similarly failed. These are people who have put their life savings into what some cases is the only asset. But addressing the issues facing this population is likely to take more time, as McGowan noted that she and others have been funding more and more issues to the address. This is like an onion of an issue, and we only just began pulling it back, and I think we will be working on it layer by layer, McGowan said. And if you find yourself in Santa Cruz County over the next week, there's some things to do. Wednesday, today, July 22nd, in Nogales, it's the Nogales National Little League Baseball Regional Baseball Tournament Opening Parade from 3 p.m. to 3:30 p.m., beginning at the Morley Avenue Port of Entry and ending at the Old Santa Cruz County Courthouse at 21 East Court Street. You can kick off the regional baseball tournament as participating teams march down historic Morley Avenue. And this Saturday, the 25th, from Elgin, Paws and Pours from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Autumn Sage Vineyards on 90 Elgin Road. Bring your four-legged buddy to a doggy ice cream social, which invites guests and their puppies to enjoy a relaxing day at the vineyard. Sunday, the 26th, in Nogales, it's the Nogales Taco Tour from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. You can join Borderlandia on a guided walk through Nogales, Sonora for an easy, approximately 2-mile walking route with 3 delicious taco stops. Leave with a full stomach and discover the rich flavors and the stories of Northwest Mexico. The tour begins in Nogales, Arizona, before crossing into Mexico on foot and includes tacos, drinks, minus alcoholic beverages, and guide services. It will return to the same location at the end of the tour. You can register online at borderlandia.org. And there's a free backpack giveaway at 1 p.m. at TCC Nogales. That's at 204 West Mariposa Road. TCC's annual School Rocks Backpack Giveaway is back for its 14th year. Stores across the country will be handing out free backpacks. Students must be with you at the event. One backpack per student while supplies last on a first-come, first-served basis. Randomly selected attendees at events nationwide will find a Golden Ruler keychain and win $250 for school supplies. And taking a look at today in history. July 22nd in 1604, the King James Bible Project has begun. King James I of England had convened a conference at Hampton Court where attendees proposed a new translation of the Bible be compiled. James sent a letter to Archbishop Bancroft, asked him to request donations from all pious Englishmen to finance the translation of the Bible. James and Bancroft developed a set of 14 instructions to the Bible's translators. The instructions included directions to keep biblical names as close as possible to the original ones and to ensure the Bible supported the theology of the Church of England. And in 1893, Catherine Lee Bates wrote the America the Beautiful. The poet, a professor at Wellesley College, wrote the poem in Colorado Springs, Colorado, after being amazed by the beauty of Pike's Peak. The poem would later be put to music, and it would become one of the United States' most iconic patriotic songs. In 1995, the Hale-Bopp comet was discovered. The comet was named for Alan Hale and Thomas Bopp, its discoverers. It was visible to the naked eye for about 18 months. It won't return to the inner solar system for several thousand years. And in 1894, gentlemen, start your engines. The first automobile road race in history was held between the French cities of Paris and Rouen. The fastest racer was Comte Jules Albert de Lyon, who broke the record for an average speed of 13.6 miles per hour. The official victory was awarded to Albert Lemaitre for completing the 78-mile journey in a gas-powered automobile. Dion's motor car was steam-powered, which disqualified him from winning that race. The Green Valley News for Wednesday, Mark DeGroft with you. Thanks for listening and stay tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona for more programming. Back on Friday. Until then, take care.